The last thing you want is for something to go wrong with your plumbing. But it happens. A lot. And the last thing you want when there's water spraying all over your kitchen or your toilet is overflowing is looking up reviews on which plumber you should call. So let me save you some time. Call The Art of Plumbing. They're always on time. They can locate the problem and fix it right away. They even help with solutions to stop any future problems. Save time. Call The Art of Plumbing today. 541-951-9405.
Hey, come take a walk with me. Not like you usually do. Something different. Put yourself in other people's shoes. Open up your mind and open up your eyes and change your direction. Change your perspective.
Welcome into Other People's Shoes. Of course, you know I'm your host, Neil Matthews. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are, of course, in the month of September. Do you remember when it was like September? I do not know the words to that Earth, Wind, and Fire song, but I feel like we need it right now. Help me welcome in my guest from the Commonwealth of Virginia. She's an award-winning author. She has this amazing book, The Joy Box Journal. We're going to get to that momentarily. She's not only become a podcast associate, if you will, but she has now become a very near and dear friend of mine. And she, in fact, has already referred guests to us. That's always fun, right? When a guest refers another guest, that's always fun. We love that as podcasters. But help me welcome in my guest, Adria Wilkins. Adria, how are you today?
Great. How you doing?
You know, I always say better than I deserve. And so I stick with that because really, I don't think I deserve a whole lot in this world. And so it just reminds me to try to stay humble the best I can.
That's good.
So we are excited to have you today. We, of course, gave away your book last month. You partnered with us. That was a great opportunity. By the way, if you missed out on that August giveaway, there may be a chance for you to find out how you can still get your hands on that book. It's a great book. My daughter has it. I think my sister by now has it. I think so many other people need to get their hands on this book, and it's amazing. We're going to talk about that as well down the way. But before we get to all of that excitement, we, of course, have to answer the most important question I believe anyone will ever answer in their lifetime, and that, Adria, of course, is this question. Adria, what style of shoes do you love to wear?
Well, I'm going to say tennis shoes.
Can you be specific in any way? Tennis shoes, that's all we get?
I either like Nike or the, I don't even know how to say it, the ASCI.
Oh, ASICS.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite kind of tennis shoes, actually. My favorite kind of running shoes are ASICS. So yeah. Do you have a certain color or, you know, style or anything like that that you really like to rock?
Well, I always like to have some kind of purple because purple is my favorite color.
Okay, I was just going to say, I know that, but I want to make sure everyone else knows that Adria really does love purple. Is there a reason behind the color choice of purple?
No, it's just something that draws me. If it has purple in it, I'm drawn towards it. And I just love it. But, you know, it also is the color of royalty. So
well, I was just going to say that. I was doing some business classes a while back. And when I say a while back, like 20 plus years ago in high school, and our business teacher said, these are the colors you should never wear to an interview. And one of them was, ironically enough, purple. So there you are.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's a sense of entitlement sometimes interviewers could perceive it as. I don't know. I don't know why I even bring that up, but maybe just a little fun fact. There you go.
Right.
So Adria, getting into your story and why you're coming on today, of course, we're in this amazing series that I really am embracing and really getting behind, and I think a lot of people are getting behind it as well, this series of What Happened When. And it's, of course, this series of events that have taken place in people's lives, dates specifically. So we're going to get into your What Happened When. So Adria, what date comes to mind when you hear that? What happened when?
Well, I'm going to digress for just a second. I think you usually ask your guest what size shoe they wear.
Well, I used to ask that, but then I got some feedback from a very good friend of ours who said that asking women what size shoe they wear could potentially be offensive. So we've kind of refrained from doing that with our female guests because we think, and we've gotten, you know, some pushback, if you will, that sometimes women are afraid of saying what their size is. So if you want to tell us, that's fine. We're open to that.
Well, shoot, I was waiting on that question. I listened to your show so much, I was waiting on that. I was like, this is like the funnest part of the show, and I'm not going to get to do it.
All right. So for you, Adria, we will make an exception because you're a good friend of ours, and we, of course, love you so much and love your laugh and your joy. So, Adria, what size shoes do you wear?
Well, I usually wear a size 8. Yeah. And sometimes it might be an 8.5, but most of the time it's an 8.
Well, to make you feel better, I wear a 12 in women's shoes.
Oh, yes. I remember you talking about that one time. That's crazy.
A whole nother story in itself. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to have to go back and find that episode and listen to it because I'm sure I've said it in so many episodes. But yeah, it's a crazy story. So thank you for being willing to share your shoe size. That's very awesome. And we're, of course, excited about that. And hopefully that sets the table for us to really kind of take in this air that we're now breathing in. We're now in the same kind of stratosphere, if you will, and kind of same area. And so with that, we, of course, have to, you know, play our new little jingle. And now we're officially in Adria's shoes. So, Adria, with that, now we can move forward, I hope, right, with our specific date. And what date does, in fact, come to mind for you?
Well, I would say June 24th, 2002.
And why that date and what comes to mind?
Well, I was at work and my husband was at work. And I was coming home and was on the street of our neighborhood, and I saw an ambulance in front of our house. And I thought, well, that's odd because there shouldn't be an ambulance at our house. And so as I get closer, my 6-year-old daughter is sitting in the back seat, and I said, something must have happened to Blake, our son, because he was medically fragile, and we had home health care that was there with him 24 hours a day. And so immediately my heart started racing, and I said, there's something wrong. I don't know why they haven't called us and let us know. And so I pull up closer. There are a bunch of people standing in my yard, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? The nurse is standing in the road. And so as I jump out of my car, I say, what is going on? And the nurse is crying, and she says, his trach came out and I couldn't get it back in. And so my first question was, how long did he go without air? And she said, about 5 to 7 minutes. And so I said, he's gone. He's gone. He's gone. And so my daughter is there. The neighbors are there. And some of these people I didn't even recognize that were in my front yard. So this one lady, who I do not even know, says, well, go ahead and get in your car and I'm going to drive you to the hospital. Well, immediately my, you know, defenses shot up, and I'm like, who are you to boss me and tell me to get in my own vehicle in the passenger seat, and you're going to drive me? I don't even know you. You know, so all my feelers just came to the edge of my skin, and I knew that it must not have been good. So she said, I am the sheriff's wife, and I'm here to help get you to the hospital. And I said, I want to know what happened. y'all are telling me I want to see my son. Why is he on the ambulance and you're not letting me see him? So by the time I walked around to the other side of my vehicle, I could barely get in the vehicle because I knew something was wrong. My legs were weak, and I knew that it might have been the end. So I'll kind of stop there and let you chime in if there's a question that you have.
Well, there's a lot of questions that come to mind. First off, do you know the day of the week? I mean, I'm just curious.
It was a Monday.
I'm thinking about this, like you come off the weekend, you know, you finally maybe get out of the house for the first time, maybe in a while. I mean, I don't know, because of his situation of being kind of constantly needing somebody there to kind of oversee him. I'm guessing there probably weren't a lot of moments where you got to leave and kind of decompress and get away. And I'm just guessing, speculating, of course, but I'm trying to put myself not only in your shoes, obviously, as we try to do so often, but I'm trying to also put myself in your daughter's shoes,
yeah,
the nurse, the, like, everyone involved. Like, I'm just like shoe hopping right now, right? In a sense. And I'm not trying to be funny there, but kind of just trying to give a little bit of levity to that. But I'm wondering, like, I think I'm going to go with your daughter first. Like, she's how old again?
She was, and I might have thrown out the wrong age, she was about 7 or 8.
Okay, so 7 and 8 year old. So, I mean, they're not like driving cars. They're not like, you know, cooking dinner, but, you know, they can kind of, I would guess, like make toast and make some cereal and maybe, you know, load the dishwasher, things like that. But she probably is super protective of your son, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like second mom, really, when you're not there. So I'm thinking, did she know what happened? Does she remember what happened? And did she,
yes,
does she at all? I mean, obviously we don't know her because she's not here, but we're only speculating because even you weren't there. But do you think she at all blames herself in any way?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot there. So we get in the car, and the sheriff's wife is driving my vehicle. My daughter's in the back seat and the nurse is in the back seat. So we are all flying as fast as we can behind this ambulance with our emergency lights on. And so I'm asking the nurse all kinds of questions. What happened specifically? How long? What were you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And so then in my mind, because the trach was out so long, and that was really the only way he could breathe, he was on a ventilator. And if his trach was out and his airway was then closed and he went that long, then to me, he was brain dead probably. And so I just said, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone. And that's all I kept saying. And my daughter spoke up and said, Mama, it's going to be okay. And so I said, well, I've got to teach at the college tonight, because that's where I had been, because I taught QuickBooks at the community college and I was getting my classroom ready. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to go teach tonight. How in the world am I going to do this with all this that's happened? And she said, Mama, you won't be going to college class tonight and teaching. You know, and so we get to the hospital and we walk in, and they have him in one of the rooms, and they were able to get his airway open and get him going on the ventilator, but his heart had stopped on the way to the hospital. And so they were trying to get his heart started. So when we walked into the room, they were doing compressions on his heart. So my daughter saw that, and the look on her face of 10 people standing around, literally beating on him, I think kind of did her in, because we went out of the room and left and went out to the car. And it was as if she was being the mama at the time. And she was like, Mama, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But I'm sobbing because I know it's not. And she was the calm one in the moment.
And your husband, where's he at? Is he on his way there, or is he?
Yeah, he had left work because he's a minister and he was at church. So he left his office and met us over there. And so he had just walked in. So he stayed in the room while they were working on Blake, was our son's name.
So now we'll jump to your shoes, back to your shoes. The hardest part of that situation in your mind, what do you think it would be?
To know that we had come so far with him. We had worked and given everything that we had. And my husband said it was as if we had been kicked in the stomach. And little Blake was getting ready to go to school. They actually had a bus that was going to come and get him. And we were preparing for that. And we had always tried to make his life as normal as possible. And it felt like the brakes were slammed. And it was now a whole different scenario.
You mentioned your husband, you know, being a pastor, a minister. So, and by default, that makes you a pastor's wife. There's a lot of things that could be said about that, you know, expectations. And, you know, for those that don't grow up in the church or haven't been to a church, people put, and I mean, not just church people, I think people in general put a lot of expectations on the wife of a pastor. There's certain, you know, protocols, there's certain levels of you have to do this, you should be like this, you have to look this way. There's almost these expectation, unwritten rules, some way even say. And I gotta ask this as delicately as I can. How does forgiveness play a role in what happened with Blake?
Well, let me think here for a second. I had to go back to the truth about where we had been and what we had done. And I had to go back to the fact that we had given all that we could. Physically, mentally, financially, we had given all of ourselves for almost 3 years. And to think that it was possibly over was a lot to swallow at the time. And then to think, okay, what do our days ahead look like? The nurse that was there with us was very upset and distraught and kept saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. She finally left. Somebody came and picked her up, and I didn't see her again until a later date. But I never held it against her, but I always ask why and what happened. I wanted to be there when it happened. I didn't, but I did. I wanted to be like that fly on the wall that really knew what happened. And because I never did, I struggled with that for about 5 years and had to go to counseling for that. So I often tell people, if you have to go to a counselor, don't consider yourself weak, because it takes a strong person to go to counseling. But I had to find out why I was having panic attacks and post-traumatic stress disorder. And my counselor said, you know, you lived 3 years in a battlefield, in a war zone, because, you know, there were days that my son's trait came out and he would turn blue, and you hear it at the hospital, code blue. That's what that means. They're dying. We had days where he almost died on us multiple times because he would turn blue. And it was for a variety of reasons. Sometimes his tray came out. Sometimes, and there was one time specifically, that he had outgrown his tray. And there was another time that his trach had been recalled. And the place that made the trach had not let any of us know that it had a malfunction in it. And we had to be care-flighted 2 hours away to Dallas to come to find out that there was a problem with this piece of equipment that was in his throat. And, you know, I ended up writing a letter to the corporate office and the president of that company and told them just the facts. And he called me one day and said, "I've been terrified to call you because I was afraid that you would cuss and that you would throw a fit in my ear." But I said, "No, I just wanted you to know that it would be nice if things have been recalled to inform your patients, to inform your equipment supply place." And he was very somber at what had happened. And Blake lived through it. But he just had a lot of spells where he wasn't doing very well. So I've had several opportunities of trying to forgive people. And I know that may have been a long answer there, but that's where it went. So
don't worry about the long answer for sure. Because I'm trying to think, like, human nature. I'm going to guess, just because you're a pastor's wife, you're not immune to, you know, obviously struggle. You're not immune to life. It's not like you live in this proverbial bubble, right? Even though we're kind of in quarantine still, right? You don't live, you still live in the world. You still have to go out and grocery shop. You still have to go out and see people and, you know, even though we're socially distanced, but you know what I mean? You're not immune to any of this, you know, life's trauma and tragedies. Just because you're a pastor's wife doesn't mean you're exempt from any of that.
Right.
And you're a human being, so you're not exempt from that either. But I guess the reason why I ask that question is because I think for me, or for anyone, I think it is human nature, perhaps, to play the blame game, right? We can blame the nurse. We can blame the doctors. We can blame, you know, we can blame the manufacturer. We can blame, we can blame, we can blame. But then I feel like the buck has to stop with God. Because if God was truly the amazing God that I believe you have your faith in, and I think we have a shared faith, if God was so great and so amazing and just so omnipresent, which means everywhere at once, he could have stopped that from happening. He could have, you know, made it so somebody caught it sooner, that they could have, you know, the ambulance could have gotten there faster, whatever it may have been. He could have gotten to the hospital faster, whatever situation may have occurred. Did you ever blame God?
Well, I figured that would be a question because I've had that question from numerous people and a good friend of mine. And she was surprised that I said no. I never blamed God.
She said, what? Yeah, my hand's up on that too. Like, what? Like, how could you not?
We never blamed God for Blake's situation. You know, he was born with spina bifida and he was born with other medical problems that caused him to not be able to breathe or swallow or control his body temperature, to go potty on his own or any of that. And so we had to, from day one, we had to not question. We had to say, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do to survive this moment? And that's what you have to do. And I've talked to many moms that have had special needs children, and they're like, yeah, you are in survival mode. That's where you are. And I didn't have time to question God. I had too many things on my plate. And I never questioned God because I trusted that he was going to walk with us through this. Now, I have asked a good friend of mine that lost a child in a car wreck. He was 16 years old, and she had just had joy throughout this whole situation in her life. And I called her last year when my book was getting ready to come out. And I said, I just need to know for myself, because I don't understand my own self, how I've continued to have joy, even in the midst of all these difficult things. And I said, how did you have joy with your son dying in a car accident? And she said, Adria, that is such a good question. I don't know the answer to. The only answer I can give you is that God helped us get through it. The faith that we have in God helped us get through it. I even asked my husband the same question. And it's almost like we're not trying to make it simple, and we're not trying to stumble over the situation. All we know is that we trusted God to help us get through it, and he helped us walk through it. Now, there were difficult days, believe me. There were days of crying most days. But there comes a place where you say to yourself, okay, this is the situation. Here we are. We know where we've been. So what are we going to do to get through this and to be able to function and live again? And that's honestly about the best answer I can give you.
No, I think that's a great answer. You know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you've seen the movie, but I Still Believe, the Jeremy Camp kind of movie. To me,
oh yes.
To me, for those that don't know, Jeremy Camp is a Christian singer. He had a wife. He's had two now, but his first wife, I think she died of ovarian cancer, if I'm not mistaken. And he wrote a song after her death, or walking through death with her. And he said, "I still believe."
Had a lot of anger in the
holiness.
Midst.
Right, he did have a lot of anger in the midst of it all, and I think he was very open about that, because he still had to question God and say, "God, what are you doing here?" But I think Now he can look back and see, you know, obviously what has transpired from that. So I don't know. Your story seemed to parallel that in a lot of respects.
Yes, it does. It does. I actually saw that movie last year when I was in Nashville at a Christian Visual Media conference, and they allowed us to see it before it came out in the movies. And they said, now there's a few little scripts that might flow across the screen, so it's not totally like theater ready, but we got to see that, and I wept horribly through that whole thing, because there was a parallel there. So I think it's interesting that you bring it up here.
Well, I'm just thinking about that because I don't know what would be harder to walk through, the death of a child or the death of a spouse. I think they're on par. I mean, I can't say, well, you know, I can get another kid, you know, it's a lot harder to find another spouse, but I mean, it's not like those things you can just pick up at Costco. I mean,
it's those internal struggles that you say, you know what, this is so stinking hard that I can't do this by myself. And so all I can do is believe in you, God, that you know why this has happened. You know that this was all I could take. You know, my husband and I, we were at the point that, you know, there were certain things that were happening that it would be like, I just don't know how much more of this that I can handle. And I think that there comes to a place where you say, you know what, it was maybe time for him to go, because it was getting so stressful. And I will, I know it's probably jumping forward, but because we have dwelt on that a long time, but when I went to counseling, I had to, or during our counseling, and it wasn't the first meeting or anything like that, it was probably midways into my counseling, a couple months in, and the counselor wanted me that day when I came in, I never knew what we were going to talk about. She said, okay, today we're going to pretend that the nurse is sitting here in the room with us, and I want you to tell her how you feel. And I was like, oh. So I started out and I said, when did his trach come out? And the counselor's like, nope. I said, I want you to tell the nurse how you feel, not ask questions. And so then I said, how much time? And then she was like, nope. You are asking a question. And so every time I would try to start, it was a question word. And so finally, after I did that about four times, she said, okay, this is where we have to stop. And she said, if and until you quit asking questions, because it'd been 5 years, you are going to continue to have panic attack. You're going to continue to have post-traumatic stress. You have to quit asking questions. I want you to make a general statement. So she said, here's a pen and paper. I want you to write down your basic feeling of how you're feeling and what you want to tell the nurse. About 5 minutes later, I read it to her. And as I read it, I began weeping uncontrollably. And I said to this nurse, my husband and I have always given 110% to our children. Whatever happened that day is between you, Blake, and God. The counselor said, that is a great start. And I said, and I was weeping. I was just like, I can't, there's nothing else I could say. I don't have anything else in me. And I left that day and I was in this office building and I just wanted to get out of there. And she said, I want you to go and continue to write this out. Well, I sat out in my in the parking lot and I said, I don't want to ever be here again. I don't want to ever be in this grief point again where I'm at right now. So I sat there for probably 30 to 45 minutes and I continued to write my feelings. And I was like, I'm mad. I'm angry. This is not fair. Blah, blah, blah. You know, I got it all out. My panic attacks and post-traumatic subsided significantly after that. And it was because I continued to ask questions. And so that's where I encourage people today that anytime they continue to ask questions or have unforgiveness, their soul is going to continue to stir inside them and they're not going to be at peace about anything.
That was powerful. Years ago, I was at a church, and the senior pastor taught our congregation how to pray. And immediately, I'm thinking, who is he to teach us how to pray? Like Jesus taught us, we're good. You know, we don't need anything else. We're super good. Like we got it. We're gonna follow what Jesus said, not necessarily your wonky prayer that you're gonna try to teach us. And he said, I think you guys all need to implement this in your life. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's not in the Bible. It's not true, right? And he says, it goes like this. It's a two-sentence prayer. So it's really easy to pray in concept. Lord, help me feel for, and then we'll insert the doctor, the way you do. And then you stop. Lord, help me see the doctor, the way you see the doctor. And you stop and you ponder and you think. You know how many times in my life I have used that two-sentence prayer? So many times I've lost count. Because I think to myself, it is so applicable to anyone, any situation in your life. Lord, help me see this person the way you see them. Lord, help me feel for this person the way you feel for them. So, Adria, I just ask you this question. Like, Have you ever thought about that? Like in any way, just thought, man, I need to really feel for them the way God feels for them. Lord, I need to see them the way you see them. And if you were to do that, I mean, what do you think would come of that?
Yes, I have. I'll give you two examples. One is of course, our son did pass away 2 days later. We took him off of life support because he was brain dead. You know, our son was thriving before all of this. He had 15 words that he would sign. He played with toys like every normal child. But now he didn't want to be touched. He didn't want to be talked to. He wanted to be left alone. And we knew that it was the right choice to let him go because it was not the Blake that we knew. And our doctors told us that this is not the Blake that we knew. And so at the visitation, we did not have like a funeral. We had a visitation, and then the next day we had a graveside service. The nurse came to the visitation, and she was weeping uncontrollably. She waited till the end to come through the line to talk to us. There was probably a 2-hour line of wait. It was a very long night. She waited till the end. And as she walked there, sobbing uncontrollably and saying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And I looked at her and I said, "You know what? It's okay. It's okay. We know where Blake is at. It's okay." I had worked through that. And then I had another day. I was out walking in our neighborhood. And it was as if God placed this thought into my mind. There were many days that I was by myself taking care of little Blake. There were days that we didn't have a nurse. We had to train before we could even bring Blake home. We had to learn how to change out his trach. We had to learn how to take care of a ventilator. We had to learn all that stuff. So there were days I was home by myself with Blake. When Eric, my husband, would go to church on Sundays, there were many Sundays that I was home with my son taking care of him. And so one day I was out walking and I felt like that God placed within my spirit and said, it was better for the nurse to have been there that day and not been able to get his trach in instead of you. Because then you would have carried that all of your life thinking, what if I had just gotten that trach back in there? And so it was as if God's gentle way of saying, you know what? I protected you from that, and I placed that burden on someone else. And that day at visitation, she was carrying it. And so, you know, I never blamed her for it. I just always had questions. And I don't know if that's the same thing or not, but in my mind, it never felt that way. I never felt bitter towards her. But she, from what I understand, was always very concerned about how we were feeling. But I tried to reiterate to her that it was okay. It was Blake's time to go home.
Wow. I mean, I don't even know how you carry yourself with, again, not playing the blame game. Because it would be so easy too, and maybe that's the challenge, and maybe that's what you've learned from that is there's nothing to be gained by playing the blame game because you just sit in this cage or this puddle and you just kind of wallow around in it and you don't go anywhere, you know, you're just stuck, and to me that is a true testament of who you are as a person that you can. Again, not sink to that level of drinking the poison, as I say so often, of unforgiveness, thinking somehow, you know, by drinking this poison, you're going to somehow affect the other person. And to me, that's just, again, a testament of who you are and your character. So with
I will
that,
tell you this.
Go ahead. Yeah.
It's not something that you just turn a switch and say, oh, you know, I'm over this. It's a process that you have to go through, that you have to step through. And one of the things that I have learned just in the past year, when the expectations that I have of something happening, the way that I think it will happen, I've got to let that go. But I've got to step back and I got to say, what is true about this moment? How am I going to react to it? Now, it might take me a day or two to do that. It's not going to happen just in one sentence and one thought process. It's going to be a painful journey, okay? And you're probably going to fight and fuss and, you know, say a few choice words and be mad and, you know, hit something. And like, I like to go out and throw eggs, or, you know, I get my punching bag and start punching. And I'm going to tell you what, I do all of it. And there are times that I have to do that, and I got to get it out of my system. But I encourage people to not dwell on it too long. Set a timer and say, okay, I'm going to give myself 30 minutes to an hour. I'm going to get all this ugliness out. And then I've got to figure out where I'm going from here. And it takes a lot to do that. I promise you, it is not an easy journey, but you have to set your mind to that, because if you don't, you are going to have a miserable life.
I love that I'm going to have to, you know, find a way to get going, that I can't continue to stay there. I love that so much. So Adria, you know, talking about this, you write this amazing book called The Joy Box Journal. Did Blake's passing inspire this book?
No, actually his birth did. His birth inspired me to write, and to write about all the good stuff along with the bad stuff, because I wanted him to be able to read that one day and to see how God had blessed us, even in his early days. He was in the hospital 100 days before we got to bring him home. And so many people from our church, people we didn't even know. I look back in that book recently, we had churches all over the world praying for little Blake. We had people sending us cards. We've got big old boxes of cards. But I started journaling back then when he was born in 99 about all the neat things that would happen. And then there might be a journal entry of the bad stuff. And so when I started seriously sitting down and writing about 4 years ago and trying to decide what this writing was going to look like, I knew I didn't want to do a memoir of Blake's life. And so a friend of mine was talking to me, and she said, you know, why don't you do a devotion? You've written a lot of devotions. They're short, they're quick, they're easy for people to read, and you can give them an idea of something that's gone on in your life. And then you can share how you worked through it and how you found joy in those things. And so about 4 years ago, we really started like fine-tuning some of those things that I had written 17 years ago. So I say that Blake was the inspiration behind my book.
And the book is called The Joy Box Journal. And the idea behind it is what? Help us with that.
The idea is that no matter what you go through in life, whether it's a fire, you get laid off from work, your house burns down, you get in a fight with your spouse, you have a sick child, you have a car wreck, whatever it is, you can still find some kind of joy. Now, it may not be instantly, but you can look back and you can say, you know what? God protected me from this. And so now I'm here, and it's okay, and I still can have joy through this. I was going to share an example and then I lost it. Sorry about that, but
That's okay. We know that about you. I know that about you. But the thing I was going to add into that, and maybe this will maybe help spark the conversation, is to me, when I first heard about your book and kind of the concept behind it and doing all of the note writing and making a box with the book, which is part of the excitement of the book, by the way, is this idea, to me, it reminded me of the movie Pollyanna. And so as a guy, you know, I'm probably going to lose my guy card or my man card because I like the movie Pollyanna. I'm openly admitting it. I love the movie Pollyanna. Part of the reason why I love the movie Pollyanna, if you haven't watched it, first off, I don't even know how you're existing as a human being. You need to go watch this movie. It's a really old movie. It's color, but Haley Mills is a very young lady in it, and she goes to move in with her aunt because I think her parents died. They were missionaries, and so she gets shipped to her aunt's house in Harrington, and the aunt, like, owns half the town, and they're all afraid of her, so I'm ruining the movie for you. But she plays this game called the Glad Game, and she tries to find a glad moment in everything. And people along the way, you know, put her to the test, like, well, what's so good about Sunday? Well, you know, she just finds a reason to be glad about everything. And then something very traumatic happens to Pollyanna personally, and the town kind of rallies around her and reminds her. Sorry. It still makes me cry every time I watch it. But they find a reason to get her to remind herself of why the Glad Game is so important. And so, again, when I first heard about your book, that's immediately what I thought of, is like this Glad Game, but we could flip it and say this Joy Game. Like, we got to find the joy in everything in life. And why is finding the joy for you so much of a passion lane for you?
Well, because there is joy to be found every day in nature. You can just go outside for just a few minutes, and I guarantee you, you will see something flying around. And if you get to looking at the details of it, you will say to yourself, there is no way that just happened. God had to have created the details in that. Every little insect and worm and everything that's out there, the detail of it alone, if you just look at that, it will spark joy in your spirit. But I wanted to tell you about this example of, with my book, there are 40 devotions. And at the end of each devotion, there are some questions. And it will be related to the devotion that you've just read. But it will be like a real personal question about your life. And it might be like, what was the most challenging thing that you've been through in life? And you write that in the journal. And then I ask you, well, how did you find joy in it? You have to stop and think about that. And I had a guy that was reading my book, and one day he told me, he said, Adria, I went through a horrible divorce about 20 years ago. And he said, I never thought anything good happened out of that. And he said, when I got to reading your book, and he said, your book may look simple, but there is so much in there that makes you think, and the questions and the way you ask them, that it goes very deep because it makes you have to think deep. And he said, I never thought I would say this, but I sat there writing and weeping and found joy through this horrendous divorce. And so that is my goal, is to encourage people to look out for joy no matter what's going on in their lives. Because every day is going to have challenges. But if we will stop for just a minute and look around, God's got a little something there, a blessing that He wants to provide for you. And, you know, sometimes I tell people when I'm speaking, I'm like, are you breathing right now? Then that right there is a joy in and of itself, because our son could not breathe on his own. you know, normally most of us breathe and we don't even think about it. Well, the way his brainstem was designed, it could not think to breathe. And so that's why he was on a ventilator. And so just to think about breathing as a joy and a gift that God has given us. And at Blake's graveside service, we had someone sing that song that Michael W. Smith wrote and sang, "This is the air that I breathe." And so that's a hard song for me to hear and to listen to. And I have a really good friend that has a podcast called The Air That I Breathe, and where that movie came from, or where that song came from. And so it is a difficult song if I ever hear it, but I have to brace myself, because the air that we breathe truly is a gift and something that we should be joyful about.
That is for sure. So, Adria, how can people get hold of the book if they're interested, if they missed out on August, because August is now past. We're in this great month of September, as I alluded to at the beginning, Earth, Wind, and Fire. We got September going on. How can people get a hold of the book?
Well, you can go to Amazon and look up the Joy Box Journal there. You can also go to my website, joyboxstories.com, and there are links there to Amazon, and you can also get it at Barnes & Noble, anywhere online. It is not in bookstores, unless it's a small bookstore. Sometimes they'll carry it, but the best place is to go online and Google it, your favorite Christian bookstore or other bookstore. I think even sometimes Walmart and Target will carry it if you just, you know, type in the name. So, and right now I think Amazon has it on sale.
Who doesn't love a sale?
Yeah.
So, Adria, as we start to wrap up today, I want to ask one more question, and then we get to play a game together, because games are fun, right?
Oh, good.
So here's my question. Looking over the span of Blake's life, he would be how old now?
He would be 21 this year.
So did you ever walk out what that would have looked like if he continued to be with you and your family and really in this world? Have you ever thought about what that life would have looked like at the age of 21 now?
Yeah, we've done that on occasion. During birthdays and stuff like that, we've done that and thought about, you know, he would be doing this. But what was interesting is the year that he would have graduated from high school, I think that just kind of missed us or something. I don't know, because I didn't even think about it. So maybe it was just a blessing. I don't know. But there have been times, I think probably the most vivid time was during my daughter's wedding. She got married 2 years ago. And that was kind of hard to think it would have been neat to have had him there for that. And, you know, my daughter even kind of, because she was young and she does still carry some things that she remembers, you know, about Blake. But there's also some things that she doesn't want to go back and visit in her mind, because she's not sure what that's going to look like. But she just had her own baby, so I think she's kind of experiencing some of that. But so I would say that was probably the most, the time that I really thought about what would it have looked like to have had Blake, you know, I think he would have been 18 or 19 coming to that, and how much work it would have been.
Would, if he had continued to live, was there any chance of him ever living on his own, or, you know, having an independent lifestyle away from you and your husband?
Well, that was the way that we were trained, was that we wanted to teach him to be independent. So that was what we were striving for and working towards always. Whether he could or not, he probably could, because he could get in a standing wheelchair and push himself around in that, because his arms from his waist up, he was very much normal. So we tried to teach him how to be independent. So he probably could have been. I've seen other kids that are his age that are vent dependent and that cannot walk, but they usually have to have some kind of helper or assistant with them.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy. I mean, it's, I guess it, I shouldn't say it's easy. I would imagine it's probably very hard to walk that, you know, kind of trajectory out, right? That parade out, if you will, like the, if you're looking at a parade level, you know, a blimp size, you're like looking over the whole span of his life, like what would have been, what would have been like. And I mean, that's,
I will tell you this, that 2 days after this event happened with the ambulance and the nurse and all that, when we went to the hospital, we actually scheduled the time that we would take our son off of life support. So what parent gets to schedule the death of their child? That's a profound thing to think about for sure. And, but I want to tell you this, the day that we took him off of life support, it was a peaceful day, a blue sky outside, and our pastor and a very close friend that mentored me during Blake's life was there in the room with us that day. And my son, my husband said to my son, "Go home, Blake." And he was saying, "Go to heaven. It's okay. It's okay." Because that's where you're supposed to be now. It's not that we wanted to let him go, you know, go on, get out of the world, but we were telling him it's okay to go ahead and relax and to just go ahead to heaven. And we left out of that room and my husband stopped and hugged me and said, "I love you more today than I ever have." And I said, "I feel so good and I feel so joyful." And you know why? Because a big burden had been released off of me. Blake was a lot of work, no doubt about it, y'all. From medical supplies to nurses to doctor's visits, he was a 2 full-time job child. He was a million-dollar baby. And I didn't have to say, "Is today going to be the day that he's going to pass away?" when we were at home. You know, an event happened where his trach would come out. I didn't have to say, "Is he going to die?" because I knew where he was. And I felt a joy at that moment while everyone else was weeping. I literally felt, I said, "I feel so good because I know where he is and I don't have to live this life of carrying this heavy load around anymore." And it felt like a new kind of freedom. And I know that's why when I meet other families that have special needs children, I know what they're feeling. It's a lot. For us just to go anywhere, it took 3 people to get him out of the house and into a doctor's office. It was a lot of work. And so I tell you that because I don't want people to feel sorry for us. I want them to celebrate that our marriage made it through this. 80% of marriages do not make it with a special needs child. I have people that I know that have special needs children. Their marriages have not made it. And so that's what I operate to say, you know what? These people fought and they said, "We are not going to let all the issues that come along with it, we're not going to let that come between us." And so I want people to celebrate with us that we made it through that. We're able to look for joy and still talk about Blake. Yes, it might be emotional at times because it's a heavy topic, but I want people to know that little Blake brought a lot of joy into our lives. Every time I would go in his room in the morning, that smile on his face, those kisses that he would blow and make loud noises while he's blowing kisses, made the days joyful.
Adria, thank you so much for talking about a very hard event, but still looking out for joy during that event. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your heart with us. I appreciate that. Friend to friend here. All right. So I usually give people a final thought, but I feel like that was a great final thought. So we'll just transition right into our game. So, of course, this is my beloved North Carolina Light Blue Cup. No orange here. No royal blue here. Just straight sky blue, as you called it. A beautiful sky blue, if I do say so myself. So there's the dice roll. You do know that we have five senses, right? You're fully aware of that?
Oh, yeah. I have a whole series on the joy in our senses.
We're going to play our game that I lovingly call Senseless. And super excited to play this with you, Adria. So we rolled the dice. You got a five. Here's a game that we like to call Senseless. I really need like a theme song for that. So maybe we'll work on that for next season. So you rolled a five. You can see it here because we are zooming, courtesy of the McCoy Project. So for all your Zoom needs, don't forget the McCoy Project. That's a free sponsorship right there. So you got number five. What is your favorite thing to taste?
Well, that's easy. I would say chocolate or Diet Coke.
In that order, or Diet Coke, then chocolate?
Either one. I have one right here with me.
That's awesome. So, Adria, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. Of course, we do appreciate it so much. You know, you shared your heart, you shared some tears, you shared some joy. I know we kind of had a little closing thought for you, but I do want to give you one final say. Like, what would you say to anyone out there who may be struggling with this idea of joy and looking for joy every day? How would you help them?
I would say, which is what I encourage you in my book, there is a little box in my book, and there's also little note cards at the back. And I usually have a question at the end of each devotion about a specific joy note, is what we call it. And it might be, what is a special memory in life that brings you joy? And you write that down, and you put that in your box. And so even if you don't have the Joy Box Journal, you could still do this and make up your own. And then for generations to come, could you imagine your great, 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 great grandchildren opening that little box and reading what brought you joy? What animal brought you joy? What memory brought you joy? I wish I had that for my great, 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 great grandparents. And so I want people to leave a legacy for their family members down the line to know what brought them joy, and hopefully that they would continue that legacy for the people to follow them.
I think that again is just so amazing. I love the idea of leaving a legacy. I think that to me is a key to life. Among the many keys on the key ring, that is definitely one of those keys that I think we all need to have on our key ring for sure. So Adria, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for letting me be on your show. I love your show.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate that. Guys, I just want to call your attention to this simple truth for me. There are so many moments in our life. There's so many dates on the calendar. I mean, there's 365 days in a year, right? And sometimes there's 366. So here's my question. What are you going to do over this next 4-month period? We got Christmas on the horizon. Before that, we got Thanksgiving. We got kids maybe going back to school, maybe not. Who knows? But where are you going to look into your life and say, man, that's a moment that I need to start looking out for joy? that's a moment I really need to take a second, really take in that breath and say, man, God, I'm grateful for this breath right now. Because there are so many people in this world that may not have it. There are so many people that when we think about Thanksgiving and we think about October and we think about all that other stuff that comes with Thanksgiving, there's so many people that don't have a table to come to sit at, to really have a meal with. And then, of course, Christmas. I know it's never too early to start talking about Christmas. There are so many people that don't have Christmas. And I'm not talking about they choose not to celebrate. I'm talking about the fact that they just don't have the means or the ability to maybe give a gift. But I want to challenge you as we kind of start to go into that holiday season. Maybe give the gift of joy to those around you. That's my challenge for you this week. Hopefully you can do that. And if you do, let us know. We, of course, would love to hear about it on social media. And, of course, we would love to hear back from you on that. So if you're interested in that, of course, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under OPS Podcast Show. And, guys, I just want to remind you of this as we close out. Remember, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. On behalf of executive producer Garrett and myself, Neil Matthews, thank you so much for listening. And stay tuned till next week when we walk in other people's shoes. Thank you so much for joining us on Other People's Shoes. As you know, I'm your host, Neil Matthews. Thank you again for joining us. Want to thank my very good friend, Adria Wilkins. Guys, go check out what she's doing. Joy Box Journal, of course, available. The journal, it's amazing. I have a copy. My mom has a copy. So many other ladies that I know has a copy. And guys, I just want to call your attention to it. Go check it out. It, of course, is available in our show notes if you're interested in getting your copy as well. And of course, if you're looking for another podcast to listen to, look out for Joy is the name of Adria's podcast. And it's a fantastic episode. They're shorter episodes, so you can get a lot of joy in such a small little box, so to speak. So guys, go check that out. Of course, we have linked that in our show notes as well. Want to call your attention to next week. We are super excited. We're going East Coast, staying on the East Coast. We're going to go out to a little place called Connecticut. Maybe you've heard of it. Here's our sneak preview of next week's guest.
When a man who really loves his family gets the arrow of divorce driven into his chest, it is a very deep arrow and it takes a while to pull it out. And really the only ones that can help him pull it out are other men. And so I decided, to start getting men around and to start helping other men. And by helping other men, I learned how to pull the arrow out and to start healing the wound.
That is right. We are going to be going out to Connecticut. We're going to be sitting down with, in my mind, a modern day Zig Ziglar. And if you don't know who Zig Ziglar is, go ahead and Google that now, kids, because it's a guy you probably want to listen to. But this guy in particular you want to listen to as well. His name is MJ. We're going to hear more about MJ's story next week. So stay tuned for that. Excited to bring that to you. We're also excited to bring to you in one package, all in one place. It finally has happened. We have redesigned www.opspodcast.com. Of course, is the website. It is home base. It is the place to go. Everything is there. The store is there. The donation bar is there. Voicemails. You can leave a voicemail straight from the page or there. It is so amazingly redesigned. We're super excited about it. Guys, go check that out right now. Of course, www.opspodcast.com. That, of course, is the landing spot. That is where everything's going to be. Social media links are there as well. So, guys, go check that out now. Bookmark it. You can listen to the episodes there as well. Super excited about the redesign. Did I mention there's merch there? That's right. Just click down. There's a little tab called Shoe Store. Take a look at all the merch we have available there. I just wanted to say thank you so much for everyone that has been supporting the show over this last year. We are super excited. The website redesign was with you in mind, you the listeners. So please go again. Can't say it enough. Go take a listen and look at that. With that being said, we'll end today's show. And guys, just remember when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. Thank you so much for listening and stay tuned till next week when we walk in other people's shoes.